Welcome to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. The ultimate insider's guide from signing day to the national championship game and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast.
Back here on the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast, it's suspension season. Barton, no team wants to hear about any headlines coming out right now. And by the way, we will bring on Dennis Dodd here in just a moment because among the topics about having your team be in the headlines is the idea of how much is the press going to be able to talk about your team. So we'll talk about that particularly in reference to LSU. But Barton, when you look at across, and we've got Deshaun Hand, currently in legal trouble. We've got suspensions potentially in the mix at Ole Miss, where we've got a couple of burglary charges, suspensions at LSU. Why do you think that it is inevitable? Like, college football has this great ability where every year, one way or another, 18 to 22-year-olds are going to find a way to get themselves in trouble during these last few weeks before the school starts and season begins. Which of these different storylines across college football is jumping out at you right now?
Nobody does college football better than the SEC, and that includes suspension season. It is the SEC is owning suspension season right now. It's I think what was it? Steve Spurrier said when he was in South Carolina, it's always fun to play. You want to get that Georgia game early in the season because half their team's going to be suspended for the first half. So we're right in that wheelhouse right now. I think obviously the biggest one is Deshaun Hand at Alabama with Florida State coming up in week one. It's going to be fascinating to see how Nick Saban handles that. I mean, a DUI charge, the Alabama folks are sort of downplaying it because he wasn't actually driving, but the engine was running, as I understand it. He was in the car. He was just asleep at the wheel. So you got to think Nick Saban's got to do something here. I mean, he's whether it's a half or a game or something, I don't know that they can. He's going to take a lot of heat if he lets this slide. And Deshaun Hand is a big piece of that defensive front. So that one is going to be really interesting. I think some of the other ones, like the Ole Miss guys, are – you know, Kadarius Webster is a really important piece of that secondary, but you know, they're playing South Alabama first game, I think.
Right.
They can probably survive this deal. But I think the bigger question there is just, is this sort of, I just wonder if the,
the focus might not be there at Ole Miss.
The Jenga blocks may start falling. You know, I just wonder how much of that program is like you said. I think focus at this point in the process. So that is just sort of how they respond and how they can bounce back from this is going to be interesting to me.
I think that for Deshaun Hand, another interesting wrinkle to this is that he is to me another example of some unrealized potential. The guy coming out of high school and along the way felt like I spend a lot of off seasons looking at him, remembering his name, and I spend less time on Saturdays recognizing him show up on tape and showing up on the screen and showing up on the field. Like, this is a player that the size, the potential, and the ceiling has always been very, very high. But when you get yourself in trouble like this, and when you put the coaching staff in a precarious position, like he is for sure part of that, like, all right, he's the next piece in, and look, he's been waiting on the bench. Like, when you look at Deshaun Hand not being on the top line of a depth chart, it was often used as an example of, you know, how many blue chippers Alabama has and how many more they have than everybody else. Like, I am wondering if he's not already on, you know, totally sturdy ground with this coaching staff and this program, he certainly didn't help himself here. Like, that extracurricular side of this is really interesting to me because, like, you're right, if Saban is willing to take some heat for Deshaun Hand, that must really tell me how important he is to this particular season, given I haven't felt like he's lived up to that high school projections and rating yet.
Yeah, but I think this is the year, though. I mean, this was going to be his opportunity because, let's be real, the guys he was playing behind are all freaks. And so this is now his time to step up. And I don't know that necessarily the buzz out of Tuscaloosa is that he's been a bust from a within the walls of that program. I still think that they have high expectations for him this fall. And it's, Alabama's every year, it's like, the next guys come up, they lose the guys in the NFL draft, and then there's these freaks show up, and you got to check your roster and be like, well, who is this guy that's just decapitated somebody?
Right.
And, this year it's going to be Rashawn Evans is one that's just going to blow it up. And I think Deshaun Hand is that guy that is or, was maybe is going to be a merge. And so, yeah, this is this because he's supposed to be one of the leaders on that team. He's supposed to be one of the guys that is now taking that leadership mantle. And so,
he's supposed to be like one of those like enforcer accountability types, because when you lose Reuben Foster, Jonathan Allen, like you're losing players whose voices held a lot of weight in that locker room.
Right. Yeah. And this guy's been around, man. He's been there. He's played a lot of snaps. And this is his time to sort of step into the spotlight along with Daron Payne. And this makes you question things a little bit for him. But I still bet you, Chip, I bet the punishment's going to be minimal. Nick Saban will handle it in-house, and he'll take the heat from the media. And Deshaun Hand will go out there on the field. I think he's going to have a huge year, and I bet he's like a second or third round draft pick.
All right. If over under 1.5 quarter suspension.
I'll go over. I'm going to say a half for Deshaun Hand. That's my pick. Are you over or under that 1.5?
I don't think Nick Saban's going to do a one quarter suspension for a defensive lineman, because that doesn't seem like you would miss that much. Right.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, cause under is basically even saying it won't be a quarter. It's just like, we're not going to let him start, and he's going to have to come out after the first series.
He'll run gassers or something, which I'm sure he's already doing, but that's what we're dealing with. Like, is it going to be a legit suspension, or is it just going to be an in-house deal? Did Cam Robinson get suspended when he got arrested with the gun?
Nope.
Yeah, he didn't get suspended, did he?
Nope.
So, I mean, there's precedent here. He wasn't driving. I guarantee you that's going to be a point of contention, that he actually wasn't, the car wasn't in motion. Saban can find a way.
Do you think that, do you think that the suspensions, the half games, the way that, particularly in SEC country, like the way that everyone seems to look and view and judge this from the outside, it always makes me feel uncomfortable. Like I kind of think that there's a lot of average Joes and Janes, average fans that are putting a lot of that are sort of weighing their own moral values and expecting, of course, they're expecting their rivals to punish as hard as possible,
right.
And they're looking at their own team to let them off the hook, or let's understand about second chances. Like I get very uncomfortable when we start to talk with fans about punishments, particularly as it pertains to some of these off-field incidents. Like where do you stand on this? Do you have a harsh stance on player discipline?
I think it depends on the issue. I mean, like, I'm not, if Deshaun Hand doesn't get suspended for this, I am not going to be someone that's like pounding my fists and saying this is a travesty, this kid has no business being on a football field. Like I'll sleep all right that night when that news breaks. But I do think that, like, if anything, the Baylor stuff has taught us something. Like, if you just allow certain behavior, and
I mean,
as it relates
domestic
to
issues, domestic issues and sexual assault, like that stuff for me is a like no questions asked type situation, because I would hope as a fan that you would be able to expect more and expect the best out of your players.
And I think that that's a that to me is a whole different category. And again, like, I think because of this Baylor stuff, we've learned like that can become, you know, schools can almost become complicit by not enforcing the rules, not holding people to task, not holding people accountable. And then all of a sudden it becomes a systemic issue. And so, man, like, that's been eye-opening, that all this Baylor stuff. And so I think that any domestic issue and sexual assault issue has to be like, I mean, that's has to be dealt with, firmly. But the other stuff, the shoplifting, the, you know, even this deal with Deshaun Hand, like, I don't know. Like, I'm just, maybe I'm soft, but I'm not going to get too up in arms if these guys aren't handled.
Public intoxication.
I was in college, man. That's the hardest part for me about some of this stuff is like with those sort of charges, like
trespassing late at night. Yeah. Like, yeah, you're like,
I mean, thank God there weren't nobody cared what the Yale football players did. You know, no, there weren't newspapers reporting on like when we got in fights or someone got arrested for being drunk, because there were plenty of that was happening. And so having been in college, like, I'm not going to get too up in arms about a guy that's, you know, had a few too many cocktails.
All right, let's bring in Dennis Dodd right now, and we will get the Dodd cast, as this has been known. Time to bring him back in the fold. And now, bringing on to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast, the Doddcast Master, the Doddcaster, Dennis Dodd. You can follow him on Twitter at DennisDoddCBS. Dennis is furiously transcribing some quotes right now for a story which we will have him back on the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast to discuss and promote for sure. Dennis, welcome to the show.
How are you, Chip? It's been a while. Glad to be back.
Well, it's been a while. You and Barton just got to enjoy some time up in New York City, getting with the planning stages of the big CBS college football attack. Do you feel energized, gents?
I do. It was informative. It was nice to see the other side, how they approach things and how dedicated they are, I guess, to their craft. I don't know, Barton, what was your takeaway?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely an interesting peek behind the curtain. You know, this was us. We got to see sort of the broadcast side and just sort of how they go about their planning for the season and everything, which was interesting. We got to talk to the head of officials for the SEC and get their points of emphasis and some of the rules changes. And so I thought that was as interesting as anything, just seeing what, you know, what sort of rules they were emphasizing, one of which, the main one, the biggest takeaway for me from that, Dennis, I don't know if you agree, is that you're going to see some, I think, 15-yard penalties flying this year for coaches that go out on the field to get into the to mix it up with the refs. That's not going to be tolerated any longer.
We should talk about that conceptually. How do we think that's going to go? Because I think it's going to be approached like basketball officials do when maybe they set the tone early in a game and call a lot of fouls.
Yeah.
And by, you know, I don't know, mid-season, a lot will be tolerated. I think what they're just trying to wipe out is coaches going out to the numbers and abusing the privilege and embarrassing the officials and making a spectacle that way. But in what you don't want to happen is some coach whose foot is 1 inch from the sideline, technically all on the field, gets flagged in a close game, and that decides the game. I don't think anybody wants that. So it'll be a little bit of feeling out. Some coach will be yelling at a player to get off the field, and he'll be on the field. Whatever it is. Is it 15? It's 15 yards.
It's 15 yards. It's a personal foul. And if you get two of them, it's like getting two techs. You get ejected.
Yeah, that's a little bit much. Just like, I don't care much if these players celebrate after touchdowns. I don't want to see a game decided because a coach was a few feet onto the field trying to get a player off, if you know what I mean.
Those get-back coaches got to earn their money this year.
They all
need
just got
some promotions.
Raises.
Yeah.
They all just got raised, the get back coaches. Barton, who are you? Okay, here's one for you. Who typically is the get back coach? Is it a coach's son? Is it a DFO?
It's usually a strength coach. Like an assistant strength coach, sometimes even the head strength coach. But those are the guys that grab a hold of that belt and just pull those coaches on the back onto the sideline. So yeah, they're built for it.
And some of them have a harness. I know it. Like they actually have some device on their belt where they can grab it and pull them back when the coach knows who's pulling and why. Yeah. I noticed that.
What do you think? All right. Well, speaking of staff sizes, Dennis, Football Oversight Committee looking into the staff sizes across college football. Number one, is the differing in the size of these college football staffs, is it something that they're concerned about? What's the backstory behind them looking into this? It's a topic they're discussing right now. And I know that we've got, you know, a great wide difference between Power Five schools with the least amount of football staffs. And if you count everybody from nutritionists to medical to everything else, I know some of them go even above 100.
Yeah, this started at the Big 12 media days last month when Bob Bowlsby casually mentioned there's a school out there with 197 staff members. And nobody followed up. No one asked who, why, what. I was not there in the room, but I was floored because I've been following this. I'm just kind of interested in it.
Well, Barton, do you think that having more is necessarily better?
Sure. I mean, yeah, it can be. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm interested in hearing Dennis's take on this. Like these days now, you know, every year Ohio State is hiring, you know, the latest fired head coach to just be their off-field analyst, and Alabama's got this going on too. And I guess is that something, Dennis, that you think should be legislated? Like, is that an unfair advantage? Is that just fair game? Like fair play? Like, hey, they're the top dogs, so they're gonna get some reap some benefits of that. Where do you stand on where those sort of big name off field guys come in and have an impact? Like, do you think that's?
I think the competitive advantage, because now everybody has some sort of analyst. I don't think I know of any school. Maybe there's some MAC schools or something that can't afford an analyst, but I think what schools are worried about is the advantage it creates in. I mean, I don't have to name the names at Alabama. Mike Loxley is now co-offensive coordinator. Steve Sarkisian was an analyst last year. You know, you can name some more. There are analysts at other schools. I think at Alabama, maybe some other schools that can do this. You wonder how often or if they're interacting with players. They can't coach them. They can't interact with them on the practice field. They can't. I don't know if they can be on the sidelines or not, but I think that's the advantage it creates, to the point that how do we know that Mike Loxley isn't, before he got promoted, wasn't interacting with these players every afternoon during practice. And I think that's the consternation by a lot of schools and a lot of coaches, because they all have some sort of analyst system set up. It's just a question of, you know, how big and what sort of competitive advantage does that give you?
Well, we know for sure that there are more staff members than media members at LSU's fall camp. Interesting topic. Just sort of, you know, we went to, we like conceptual discussions here. There's part of me here that kind of says, who cares? But there's also an availability now. If you're not going to sit around at practice, get your 15 minutes of B-roll beforehand, get your non-answers from the scrum afterhand, you know, there's an argument that this is more time to make sure that you're checking up on, who owns that car, police records, doing some more in-depth research type stuff. But then there is also the issue of worry about schools taking over and controlling the message to a point where they have almost shoved the media out. And now college football coaches, notoriously paranoid, would probably love to have everything completely closed down, particularly as it pertains to injuries and such. Dennis, from your seat, what has led LSU to this place, and do you think that it's a big pivot for that program?
All that stuff you're talking about is valid, but it's still information that's going out there that people want to read and see and hear about and watch. And for LSU to do that, LSU traditionally has been one of the most inclusive, I would say, media-friendly programs around and in the SEC, and this sets up a wall that I think does a disservice to the fans, the consumers, the players. It just seems out of character for LSU.
And for Ed Orgeron, too, right? Like, I would have guessed. Yes. I would expect Ed Orgeron, beyond anybody else, like, he's the guy that's been, hey, this is a family. We're all in this together. Like, he's been the media-friendly guy and welcoming reporters into to the football building. And I feel like this is sort of it's in his character to make it as open as it's ever been and allow the media in and continue to build the buzz, because ultimately that's what Ed Orgeron is all about, is pushing this sort of this family narrative. So I'm really surprised specifically that it's coming from him.
Yeah, by eliminating distractions, he's created another distraction, because this is not going to end here. You know, people are, okay, what about during the week? What about next year? How is that going to be handled? You know, he's, you know, in the context of trying to win games. You know, I tweeted this as well. I mean, for decades, the LSU has been, not LSU, the SEC has been known generally for its friendliness and openness to the media. Now, nobody from the SEC is going to tell them what to do, but it's just different. You know, you're right, Barton. Ed Orgeron is, in general, a jovial guy. He showed up at the SEC media days in a suit, you know, saying it was going to be different, and he did nothing but spout cliches. Look, that's his choice. I'm not going to argue that. But I love the old Coach O. I love the guy that ripped off his shirt and challenged the entire Ole Miss team to a fight. Probably not a good look as a head coach, you know, ever, but that's how he made his reputation, as one of the great recruiters of the present day, and a pretty jovial guy and native Cajun. I just think, and at LSU, those people want more, not less. They're getting less.
So disservice to fans, disservice to the players, not being able to have that experience. I mean, I think there's some media training, right, that comes along with this.
Oh, they all do it. I say this every time something like this happens. It's totally hypocritical for, let's say, a true freshman to win a game in front of 92,000 in Tiger Stadium, but he can't answer a couple of innocuous questions from beat reporters after a Tuesday practice. It just doesn't make sense. You know, he can be composed enough to win that game, but can't be trusted enough to say the right thing to a couple of hacks after practice. I think it's stupid.
Barton, do you think that the change in attitude at LSU will end up coming back to bite them if things don't necessarily go as planned or as expected this season?
I don't know. You know, I don't want to overstate like whether this is a big deal or not, but to me, the one thing I look at in this is, I wonder if this is the first sign that maybe Ed Orgeron, excuse me, is going to overthink things a little bit as the head coach.
Yeah.
You know, like
getting the tight, you know what?
Because that's absolutely. I mean, that's the question. I mean, we were up there talking to coaches up there at the CBS thing in New York this week, Dennis. Like, that was sort of what people were asking about Coach O is, yeah, he can recruit, he can motivate, but, you know, how's he going to manage games? And how's he going to be as a head coach? And I think this is overthinking it. Like, you're not going to learn anything from watching the first 10 or 15 minutes of warm-ups and practice.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to report anything. It's just, again, it's just a I think unnecessary. I remember when I'm in Nashville here, and in Derek Mason's first year at Vanderbilt, he was very secretive about their practice and their starters, and he wouldn't really release anything to the press. He sort of had this like, oh, we've got this secret that we're keeping from everybody. And they go out and they were the worst team in college football the first few weeks of the season. Right. And it's like, look, just I just think it's not necessary to go to go through those links to be that secretive about things. Just put your product out there, and I mean, that's to me what's gonna how Ed Orgeron is gonna be great is if he just lets his dudes play.
Yeah, he's gonna look at the end of the day. He's gonna be judged by how many games he wins, and you know what number over or under 10 he is this season, or the first time he loses to somebody he shouldn't, or if this ever happens and did happen a lot in the previous regime, you know, mishandles the clock at the end. None of this stuff that's happening now is going to have an impact on that. So why create, you know, what we're sitting here talking about right now that, you know, when they come out from beyond the bunker, we'll be asked about, you know? So I just think it's an unneeded distraction while eliminating distractions.
Keeping it right there in the SEC West, Barton and I have had the joy of sort of unpeeling this onion as it's continued to fall apart at Ole Miss. You know, we are even getting you know, couple potential defensive starters picked up on some burglary charges on Tuesday night as we sit here to record on Wednesday. Matt Luke's got his hands full right now, but yet he is still one of the, you know, he is right there at the top of the list. When you start to look at the potential for who will be the head coach beyond this season, where Matt Luke is the interim coach in 2017, at the end of this football season, come November and December, when Ross Bjork is trying to make a decision for the future of the program, Dennis, on CBSSports.com, you put together your list of 15 realistic candidates. When you were doing... Before we get into some of these names, when you were doing the research for this, what was the vibe that you got from insiders in terms of how the Ole Miss job is viewed right now, given the NCAA sanctions that will be coming, given the step back that I assume will happen on the recruiting trail? Like, how are people looking at the Ole Miss job in terms of, you know, how desirable it is?
Yeah, that was my intent of waiting 11 days before I did it, because you know I saw these PO Lane Kiffin, everybody jumped on who they thought would get the job. I said, you can't even begin to think about this unless you know what kind of shape the program's going to be in. You know, if it's a 2-year bowl ban and multiple scholarships and players are allowed to transfer, you know, which I think is a possibility. You know, if they do get a 2-year bowl ban.
Right. We've already got one self-imposed. So, like, that's set for this year. And so that would be the potential that the NCAA adds another one on there in addition to scholarship reductions and other sanctions.
Yeah. So answer me that question, and then I can start to answer the second question of who it's going to be. That's why I was pretty inclusive. I did 15 people, you know, depending on what situation develops. And, you know, the guy that has the inside track is a guy who has the job now, Matt Luke. He's going to be in front of those players in the administration every day trying to prove himself. That's an on-job interview. Not many people have that at his age. I think I'm trying to remember how old he is, late 30s, early 40s, that, you know, you can get this SEC job by taking him through this, you know, really bad, bad situation in 2017. I really worry about Ole Miss. Say they go into November at 4-5 and the seniors sit there and go, what do we have to play for? You know, and everybody checks it in. So it's going to be a big, big challenge. If he gets him to 8-4, you know, you might as well knight him, put the hat on him. He's going to be the head coach, because this is really going to be hard.
Of the coaches that you've got out there on your list, there's the potential, and you mentioned this, but Butch Jones' move to Jimmy Sexton.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that was with an eye on the future, or do you think that helps entrench him?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that. No, I'm trying to remember who his former agent is, and escaping right now.
I think it was Trace Armstrong, was it not?
So it's Trace Armstrong. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Who's very, very powerful and frankly a rival Jimmy Sexton. So that was a big get for Jimmy. But I guess my point in putting Butch Jones on there was, like, nothing's going to happen in this coaching search until Jimmy Sexton has his say. And Butch Jones being his newest client is significant in that that'd be a heck of a landing spot if, you know, they do the knee jerk in Knoxville. I think I'm on record as saying I think Butch is underrated, not, you know, not incompetent, having won 9 games twice in consecutive years, taking over on probation, Title IX investigation, Derek Dooley 2-14 in his 2 previous years in the SEC. I think he's improved the program significantly. You may not like how he speaks in public or won't admit the fact that last year was a disappointment, but those are semantics. I think Butch Jones is a good coach, and that could be a great landing spot for him.
Do you get a sense, like to me, when I see this Ole Miss job, I think of it as like a group of five coach, like a, yeah. you know, maybe a Frank Wilson or someone of that nature yeah. taking a step up. Is that your read as far as the level of coach that they're going to be able to attract, or do you think they could surprise some people by digging up a bigger name somewhere along the way? I know a lot of that depends on the sanctions, but I'm curious what vibe you get on that front.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I think that may ultimately be what it is, because they can't get, you know, a sitting Power 5 coach either because of what the sanctions are, what they could be, or, you know, guys under contract. And so then you get to those suspects like Frank Wilson, who's one of the best recruiters in the country and was Les Miles' right-hand man at LSU. You get to a Neil Brown at Troy, who's only 37, I think, and has done well, 14-11 in 2 seasons. I absolutely think that's where it could end up. You know, is Chad Morris one of those guys from SMU? Mike Norvell, right up the street in Memphis, who I hear would like to go to Arkansas, but that job might not be open. You don't know. And the SEC is the SEC, so I think that could definitely happen.
Is Ole Miss going to still be willing to pay, you know, in that $4 million range for a rebuild type job?
Well, the short answer is yes. The long answer is they'll be saving, you know, about $15 million they didn't have to pay Hugh Freeze, who walked away from this year's salary plus his buyout, without a peep, by the way. So what did that tell you about what's to come? The other side of that is I think the people who run that program and the boosters who contribute to it, you know, are going to be very, I don't know, frugal about the money they spend on the next guy. You know, if it's a big-name guy, they might go all in, but they go, look, we paid this much for the last guy, and what did we get out of it? They actually got a lot. They beat Alabama twice and went to consecutive
New Year's Six bowls.
New Year's Six bowls. So, yeah, I mean, they've got the money to do it. You know, I don't – in that division, you almost have to pay the guy $4 million next, or you look like you're underachieving because everybody in the league makes at least that much.
Do you think there's more to come for Ole Miss? Do you think that they are out of the storm?
I absolutely think there is. I think this gets a lot worse before it ends, whatever ends means, because you have two parallel scandals on different tracks, one not necessarily related to the other, one sort of a moral failing. The other is an ethical NCAA rules-breaking thing, but they could intersect, could cross.
Well, elaborate on that. Like, what are the two tracks? Because you're talking about one of them is the defamation lawsuit, right?
The lawsuit, yes. And the ongoing scandal with Hugh Freeze. Maybe it's three if you count an NCAA investigation going on. But, you know, this thing didn't get to this level when Hugh Freeze didn't lose his job until Houston Nutt filed a lawsuit and somebody found a phone number. Now, as far as I know right now, that has nothing to do with the ongoing NCAA investigation. It might continue in the future if the NCAA decides that those calls that Hugh Freeze and his staffers made to those journalists, compromise the integrity of the investigation. That could be an added violation. But right now, it's a moral failing that I think is. I will just say this: I don't think it's going to end with a single 1-minute phone call to an escort service.
Whew. That's
this lawyer. I'll tell you what: this guy's good. The one point I wanted to make, you know, Houston Nutt's lawyer named Thomas Mars, he was former general counsel for Walmart, which is not insignificant. That means he had to deal in international law He knows his way around a courtroom. We know he knows his way around Freedom of Information Act request. And I think to this point, he has completely outgunned Ole Miss's legal department to the point that, you know, he's – I'll just say this. This is not the end of this. And to this point, he's got a leg up on those lawyers at Ole Miss.
What about your visit to hang out with Sam Darnold? You think that you're talking to a Heisman Trophy winner?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty – yeah, it's a, all the math, all the algorithms work. He's in his third year at USC. He's the USC quarterback going into his third year, and he's acclaimed. That's a pretty good place to start, and you're in L.A., and we know from what he's done so far, he's not a fraud. That's a pretty good advantage for the Heisman voters who, you know, I don't think are going to go with Lamar Jackson again. He's not going to be a two-time winner. So the natural inclination is to look elsewhere. And you've got this now redshirt junior who just came off throwing five touchdown passes in the Rose Bowl. First time in 9 years, I think USC was in it and obviously won it. And everybody wants to believe that USC is back. With, I think it's the second longest winning streak in the country, 9 games, and favored to win the Pac-12. So, yeah, I've seen this look before. He's got the entire look of being a Heisman Trophy winner.
Dennis, were you able to get in his dome a little bit and sort of find out who he is? And I mean, what's – like, when I remember him from coming out of high school, he was a very – understated, soft-spoken, yeah, but super competitive, steely-eyed kind of guy. Has his personality started to come out as he's matured in that program, or is he still a pretty kind of quiet, soft-spoken guy? What was your read in terms of just his personality?
Much the same. Very chill, which helps him on that campus. I ask him if he can walk across campus, and he goes, yeah. You know, he's in the Annenberg School of Communications, which is right across the street or a sidewalk from Sports Information, where he would have to go for interviews and stuff. So he doesn't have to travel that far in that sense. But, yeah, he's a really chill guy. He gets it. You know, he's not bothered that much by all the adulation. You know, he'll stop and take a selfie with students and that type of stuff. But he's all about ball. You know, he's one of those guys. And you saw him coming out of high school. He's much the same. I did ask him about, okay, I've seen this look on guys' faces before. When did it hit you that, you know, you just won the Rose Bowl? And he started gushing about that because it's been a dream. His whole family's USC fans. His grandfather played there. There are other connections. And he is absolutely at the place he wants to be, succeeding at a high level. He's not as, I guess, colorful as, say, a Matt Leinart or some of the other guys there. But I'm never going to disparage a kid for who he really is. I just think he's very kind of a quiet guy who gets it right now.
No, I kind of like it about him, honestly. He's just a competitive kid, and he is focused. And at least that's my read. He's just a focused guy, and doesn't seem like the type that ever gets too high, gets too low. I'm curious if you caught much buzz in terms of like who his targets are going to be, the receiving core. There's some new faces out there this year.
Yeah.
Were you able to dig up kind of who they're excited about at the receiver position, or
excited about? That was the last question I asked him, because I said you lose a lot at the receiver position, and I wasn't able to go to any practices while I was out there, but as you know, they're really, really young. But
yeah,
he's been throwing with these guys all offseason, and he's really high on them. So, yeah, no, I was. I think that'll work its way out. I think that's something that USC is not settled on going into the season. The talent is there. We just haven't learned their names yet.
Well, Dennis, we appreciate you stopping by. This will certainly not be the last time we get you here on the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast. We've got a lot more to unfurl and figure out before the start of the college football season. And then we'll be leaning on you right there in the heart of things throughout the season. So, Dennis, thank you very much.
Thanks, guys. I look forward to it. It'll be fun.
Thanks, Dennis.
Right.
Our thanks to Dennis Dodd. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Dennis Dodd CBS. Barton, now it's time to introduce what I hope will be an award-winning closing segment. This will bring us all the potties, I guess. Are they called potties? The podcast awards?
I don't know, but that's a great name. I hope that's what it is. I want a potty on my mantle.
Yeah, bring us the potty. Okay. The award-winning closing segment beginning now is simply question of the day. The question of the day. Chip has the baton, so I'm going to pitch it. I've got an answer to the question of the day. But the question of the day, Barton, is what is the week one schedule, obviously, as Florida State, Alabama, one of the biggest games that we might get to see all season. Two of the top teams, two national championship contenders. We've got some action on Thursday. We've got some action the week before. Goes all the way through Georgia Tech and Tennessee on that Monday night. Football all the time. I mean, it is almost an overload for your brain and your eyes. We'll, of course, be here the whole way. So in the week one schedule, which is packed with some tasty matchups, what is one that you think is sneaky good? So a sneaky good week one game.
Well, the one I've got circled that I'm as excited to watch as any other game in that whole slate is the NC State South Carolina game. I know that's in your backyard a little bit, but so I would think have a little bit of insight on that game as well. But man, I mean that's going to be NC State's got one of the best defensive lines in the country. They are a team that I've seen Final Four predictions for them. Like they're all the
I can't believe Cole Kubelik did that. I can't believe he did that to the NC State fans,
pick, man. I think Cole does a good job, and I respect his him going out on a limb. But that's a ballsy one. So, but they are good. Like they're legit. They've got a lot of talent. They trot out legit, big time athletes, and they're playing the South Carolina team that is also very sneaky good. Like they're. I think a legit East contender. I think that there's no one in the East that they can't beat. They've got a great quarterback. We're going to see. I mean, I think ultimately at South Carolina, a lot is going to boil down to how good is their offensive line, and we're going to find out how good their offensive line is really quickly in week one. So that, to me, is going to be a fun game. There's another game I almost picked. I don't want to water down my pick by giving two, and I want to hear yours. But NC State South Carolina's got me fired up.
All right. Man, this is a weird one. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Maryland at Texas.
Okay, bring
like, it. Dude, this is a really fun game for me because it's I'm tuned in because it's Tom Herman's debut, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I am not overlooking the fact that this like DJ Durkin led year two DJ Durkin led Maryland team act like they are would not love to step into Austin. Like I would not be surprised if like we tune in and all of a sudden Maryland's up like 10-0.
Oh yeah.
Like that's an 11 a.m. local kickoff. Boy, Maryland, Texas, I think is sneaky fun. I think Texas ends up winning the game eventually, but like
is that in Austin or is that where are they playing that game?
It's in Austin. It's in Memorial Stadium.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think what do you think?
Well, no, I agree. I think that'll be a fun game. I think it's going to be. I mean, Maryland's a really interesting team. I think they're better than people realize, and I agree. Like I think when people look at Texas's schedule, that is a automatic pencil in the W. And I don't know if it's that easy of a game. I think that there may be some overlook factor there. I think Texas has USC in week two, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
So there's some, I mean, it's hard to start looking ahead in week one with Tom Herman. I don't think that's going to happen, but still USC's looming. I mean, that would be quite the gut punch to Texas fans if Maryland somehow manages to pull that upset. So I am fascinated by that game. But I will say this, though, Chip. I might have that game at least on a split screen for another 11 a.m. game that I almost picked, which was the Wyoming-Iowa matchup.
Oh, yes.
I think that's going to be fascinating. I mean, Josh Allen, maybe the top quarterback in the country. Iowa, new offensive coordinator. We'll see if, you know, they that it could be kind of an ugly game, but it's, I think it's going to be a really interesting one.
All right, so the other one that I had on the on this lineup is one that will be opposite of NC State, South Carolina. I want to see Temple Notre Dame. Like, I, you know, Temple lost Matt Rhule, but Jeff Collins was a very good defensive coach coming from Florida, and they're, you know, Temple lost a lot of starters, but that's been a program that has built up into being an American Athletic Conference contender. They're poised to take a step back this year. But, boy, I kind of think that with all the pressure that's on Notre Dame, again, Brandon Wimbush, like, if he gets out there, he's got enough talented wide receivers, you know, Equanimeous St. Brown certainly leading the bunch. But those are like some spots where I think you're not trying to root for an upset, but I feel like outside of the NC State South Carolina game, which will tell us a lot about both teams. You know, I think that's like one of all the games we just mentioned, that's the one where you look at it, you're like, all right, we just learned a lot about some teams we had some questions about. I think the other ones just might be rooting for chaos, right?
Well, I also, the game, I mean, that Notre Dame game is going to be, I mean, that's our first real look at Brandon Wimbush. And there's a lot of Brandon Wimbush talk, you know, that he's the most talented quarterback on that roster that had DeShone Kizer and Malik Zaire. And now it's his time. And, you know, he's, like you said, that'll be a well-coached, good defensive team at Temple. That is going to be a fun game. I agree. That'll be really, I think we'll find out something about Notre Dame that game for sure.
All right, so if you want to weigh in on the question of the day, you can just holler at us on Twitter, at Barton Simmons or at Chip_Patterson. You can hashtag it question of the day, or you can just hashtag it sneaky good, or you could just throw a week one game at us. Make sure to put it on our radar. I'll be about it. I will have so many screens around me at all time, you would think that I've got on 8 pairs of Google Glass glasses or something like that. I'll be a half computer by the end of that first weekend. So let us know. Make sure that you subscribe to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast. Subscribers get the episodes first. Give us a review. Give us a rating. Keep the feedback coming. And we are going to continue to deliver this hotness on the podcast. So, Barton, thank you so much for your work. Thank you, Dennis Dodd. We will be back on Thursday with a new episode.